Portugal are through to the knockout rounds. Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC Daily. I'm Kay Murray. This is Luis Miguel Echegaray. You can call him LME. Portugal are through. Two goals from Bruno Fernandes. It looked as though the first goal was Cristiano Ronaldo's, but apparently hair doesn't count, Luis.
No, he has some good hair gel, I think. Because otherwise, had his hair been a mess, I think he probably could have claimed that one. But that was definitely a Bruno Fernandes goal. FIFA claimed for it to be so. And listen, this is the apology train, our choo-choo all aboard. LME really predicted. I thought Portugal were really going to beep the bed at this World Cup, and they didn't. Fair play to Fernando Santos. He seems a little bit more flexible in his strategy and his formation. I thought Bruno Fernandes and Bernardo Silva, the Manchester duo, they were fantastic today. And Uruguay, my goodness, so disappointing, Kay. They really are a shadow of themselves ever since Diego Alonso took over. I thought they were going to really show what they're all about after Diego Alonso took over in the qualifiers. But no, it was pretty bad. It was very boring the first 45 minutes, actually.
Cristiano Ronaldo had also already come off when Portugal were awarded a penalty. What did you make of the decision for that penalty?
It was a pen, I think. I think when you show the slow motion, you could see the hand touching the ball. I was reading Twitter during that moment. It's never a good thing to do that, I guess. But, you know, obviously people could. People complain.
Exactly. Another moment's wonderful times.
Yeah, it's an evergreen message, isn't it? No, it was a penalty. And I know our producer hates those kind of pens from Bruno Fernandes. But, you know, it was a good finish. And I think it pretty much told the story of Uruguay right now. They were too passive at the beginning, devoid of ideas at the end, and Portugal took full advantage. So well done. They're in the round of 16 alongside France and Brazil.
Yes, exactly. Three of them already through. Now, scoring first is actually very important for Portugal. We've got one of the very good stats through here. They are 14-0-3 in World Cup matches. That's win, lose, or draw, by the way, guys. I had to learn that when I came to America. When they score first, that's the second most wins without a loss when scoring first in World Cup history.
Wow.
It's Poland who have the record there, and they are 15-0-0. And you don't need to know which way draw and loses when it comes to 15-0-0. But so Portugal have changed your mind somewhat, Luis Miguel. Do you think they can build on this and that they can go on and cause a bit of trouble in these knockout rounds? Or are you going to wait to see who they're going to get?
No, I think that Fernando Santos has shown me that he's evolved, at least in this tournament. They are more than Cristiano Ronaldo. They have a tremendous midfield. I mean, I talked about Bruno Fernandes and Bernardo Silva, but obviously the likes of Ruben Neves. And, you know, and then when you have João Cancelo on one side and then Rafa Leão, obviously I feel for Nuno Mendes, who was just in tears at the beginning there. An injury which surely puts him out of the World Cup. But this is a very deep squad. But most importantly, my thing about Portugal, Kay, was can you be more than just, you know, your tunnel vision, focus to Ronaldo, be reactive? They're not being reactive in this tournament. They're being very proactive, and that's a great thing to see.
Let's bring Gab Marcotti in. He's watched this game as well. Portugal against Uruguay, finishing 2-0 to Portugal. And it'd be great, Gab, to hear your thoughts on what we saw in this clash.
I'm pretty much on board with LME. It's funny, in the build-up to this day on the Gavin Joe show, we were saying, like, okay, Fernando Santos should pick Antonio Silva to replace Danilo Pereira, but he obviously won't. And we were right. He did. He went with Pep. And I thought they actually held up pretty well. Grudgingly, I have to give credit to Fernando Santos because he showed that, as LME said, it's not just doing it defensively. He is playing, I think, around the skills that he has available to him. Would it be better, in my opinion, if João Félix were on the bench and Rafael Leão were playing? Yes. But hey, you take one thing at a time. And I think we're getting there. And I think if this team's going to advance, you're going to need the whole squad. We saw Leão come on and score last week, or not last week. Game before this.
It feels like last week, that's for sure.
It does feel like last week. It feels like we're about 36 games in between.
We've had the last of those early games, guys, so don't worry about that. Although Gab's actually out there in Qatar. We'll get to another story later that's just broken while this game was going on that has given Gab even more work, and that's to do with Juventus. But that comes a little later in the show. Just to let you know, though, it is coming up. All right, Luis, you just said that going on Twitter can be a bit tricky at times. You know, you never know what you're going to find. We've just been taking a look on Twitter and we found that Cristiano Ronaldo has tweeted. He's had nothing better to do after the game but tweet. How do you like that, LME? Silencing another one of my haters with that performance. I mean, already it's got 4 billion quote tweets on this one. So, well, you know, people have been feeling that you've been very, very harsh against Cristiano Ronaldo, and it seems to have bothered him too. So, well, do you take back what you've said?
I'm just really glad that Ronaldo, unlike half my family, cares about me and is and knows my name and wants to share me and tweet at me. I mean, it's fantastic. Thank you so much. I'll take it. Just, you know, just like Andy Warhol said, any kind of publicity is good publicity. So I'll take it. I'm not taking anything back. I never even said anything bad. That first penalty for Ghana was not a penalty for Ronaldo shouldn't have taken it. And then when the refs are calling him a genius, like, come on, like it wasn't a pen. And today he didn't score. It was Bruno Fernandes and FIFA agreed with me. I think Ronaldo's amazing. But when it's not his goal, it's not his goal. I'll take the publicity, though. Thank you.
It would be nice if you could tweet him back, but I don't think you're going to be able to do that because it looks like he's blocked you.
Oh, again, him and my family as well. So there you go.
Wise decision there. Yeah, what did you make of the goals then in this one? Because obviously there's talking points with both of Portugal's goals today.
So, okay, well, first of all, I mean, putting on my Cristiano fanboy hat, he should have had two goals today, which would have taken him up into double figures in 19 games, because obviously he should have stayed on the pitch and he should have converted that penalty that Bruno scored, and obviously should have been given the first one. Now, look, realistically, I think Cristiano's at the stage where he knows that he's going to need to contribute in different ways to this team if they're going to go far. And I think he's trying to do that. And as for the first goal, reality is, I have absolutely no idea if Cristiano touched it. But even if he didn't, without Cristiano going across, I would imagine that the goalkeeper, you know, at least has a better chance of getting there, right? So maybe we should. I mean, you can't award somebody a goal if they don't touch it because that's just the way football is. But you should certainly get, I think, a lot of credit for the goal.
Yeah, there you go. So there you go. Everyone's happy now. We still had to get a little bit of a dig in and bring up other games, but it's all right. Not to worry because you've been blocked anyway. So that's Portugal through, Brazil are through, France are through as well. All three have qualified for the knockout rounds. But Geb, we were wondering what's been your favourite game so far in the World Cup? One that maybe you've been at, one that you've watched on the TV. What stands out to you when I ask you that question?
Well, I'm going to limit myself to the games I have actually been to. Just because you guys know this, being the person experiencing it is just different. So for me, I'm going to mention two games that stand out. One is watching Japan's rousing late comeback show to beat Germany. As you know, I'm a bit of a Japan fan, having lived there growing up. And the other one is that dramatic ending to the Wales-Iran game, you know, with those two goals coming so late, the attempted decapitation, Wayne Hennessy on Mediterranean, the edge that was in the game, the intensity, you know, both these teams knowing that, you know, they needed to win this game really to have a shot. It was just great drama and great fans as well. Just so respectful at the end. Again, the stereotype of Japanese fans cleaning up after themselves, is a stereotype, but it's true. I've seen it. And it's funny because they clean up after themselves, but they don't actually make a big mess. So maybe it's actually, you know, it's very simple and quick. But also a lot of the Wales fans after the game staying and applauding Iran and the Iran fans. For me, you know, that's the other side. Are we going to encounter these teams again much later in the World Cup? Probably not. But, you know, that's why I'm talking about them now.
And that's the joy of the World Cup, isn't it? Getting to see all these teams in action too. You're loving a bit of that cleaning up after yourself from Japan as well, Luis. Are you like that? Well, clean up after yourself?
No, are you kidding? I'm Peruvian. I'm an absolute mess. No, my best friend, one of my best friends growing up in England is Japanese. And Gab's point is like on point. Like, yes, they clean up, but like he never really had anything to mess in the first place. So it took him like 5 seconds. Whereas like me on the other side, like It's just an absolute mess. I went to boarding school and his room was right next to mine. His room was impeccable. It's like a museum. It's like if like the teacher showed prospective students to come visit the school, they would use his room. Mine was like a Peruvian cave. So like it's completely different. So yes, I agree. My favorite match, by the way, is the Canada-Belgium one. And it's purely because I'm a romantic with these things. Like Canada, so naive in this tournament, but like so courageous. And they just went for it. And it was great to see because Belgium were just like, what is happening? That to me was my favorite game.
Also, just before we go on to some of the picks from the tournament so far, let's just put a stop on the Portugal-Uruguay reaction, because I want to know, Gab, picking up from what Luis was saying, he's talking about how Fernando Santos is changing his mind somewhat, that he's adapting to this side and maybe taking things a little bit further than the things he was criticized for before. Is there anything you've seen from them in these first two games that has changed your mind in any way about them, or were you always on board the Portugal team this year?
No, I wasn't on board at all. I wasn't on board at all because, you know, the reality is this is a dilemma in every sport, right? Do you put your best players out there or do you put your most balanced team out there? And this is a team which has a glut of talent in certain positions, mainly attacking positions, and a manager who historically is not a particularly attack-oriented manager. So I always wondered, it takes a tremendous amount of sacrifice, not just from, you know, we mentioned Cristiano, but Bernardo Silva, Bruno, all these guys, João Félix even, you know, I'm not the biggest João Félix fan, but, you know, these guys have to work harder to make it work. João Cancelo as well at the back. Now, obviously, with Nuno Mendes out, I'm assuming Guerrero's is gonna start the next game. Just imagine that back line where, you know, poor Ruben Dias. I have two of the most attacking fullbacks in the universe, and I have a 40-year-old man, you know, and I got to somehow keep everything together, you know. So I love this idea of a team coming together. In the end, it's the oldest cliche. We know that, right? So the 11 best players don't always make the best team, but it's equally, you want your difference makers out there. So it's finding that balance, which I find so fascinating, especially at a World Cup.
Yeah, this group is crazy, by the way, okay? Because now, obviously, Uruguay and Ghana, of course, it's all down to that game now, which is kind of amazing, given the history, of course, of what happened in a previous World Cup.
Yeah, just in case you're new to the World Cup for any reason, or you're a youngster watching this, it was a infamous handball in 2010, a very deliberate handball from Luis Suarez on the goal line that broke the hearts of the Ghanaian side. So there's a lot of history there. So can they get their revenge in this game? That's going to be interesting to see. Let's continue talking about our tournament picks then, shall we, Luis?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the talk is about teams and results and managers so far. But, you know, let's have a focus now on the players. You know, there's been some surprising performances for players across the tournament. Kay, I was wondering, and Gab obviously follow after, but Kay, I was wondering if you had any players that have surprised you in the World Cup so far.
Okay, so mine's going to come off the pitch and it's very fitting with something we've seen today. And I just want to give Tyler Adams some praise for how he's dealt with a difficult question today in a press conference. Already have a lot of respect for Tyler Adams. If you haven't already, go and check out the US Men's National Team 26 stories. You can do that over on the US soccer page. You'll see the history that Tyler Adams has. He is no stranger to being a role model. He's been a role model to his brothers. He talks about the importance of having a very strong father figure in your life. And I thought the way he handled everything today, especially being corrected on his pronunciation of Iran, and then tackling a very difficult topic, I think he did so very well. And I'd like to give him a lot of praise. And that's also, you know, I could give him praise for what we saw in the game against England on the pitch as well. And we did that after that game. But for what he had to encounter today, I have to tip my hat to Tyler Adams.
I love it. Gab?
Oh, wow. I find it hard after just two games, but I'll give you somebody from a game I watched, Mehdi Taremi. You know, obviously before he got wiped out by Hennessy and then getting back up and then fighting on. And in the first game as well, when, you know, they're getting battered by England. I mean, that guy's got serious stones. And if I can give an honorable mention, just in the interest of balance, and I know it feels weird, right? We're all picking guys in the same group. We have just other people to talk about. But Harry Maguire, after what he's been through, what his confidence must be like. And look, I personally, you know, were I English, and I would make it 11 on merit and balance, he would not be in the lineup. You know, sorry, Harry. But after what he's been through and the abuse he's taken, and a lot of it is down to his rubbish performances, but also some of his rubbish decisions. But to be able to put that behind you, be able to compartmentalize that and to play, I mean, I thought that was really impressive. And, you know, we talk about role models, right? Risk of getting soppy. Any one of us who's done something stupid or has failed at something, you look at Harry Maguire and he says, you know what? I can get back up and I can write a new chapter, a different chapter. And look, and he's done that. And for me, this is going to stick with me, even if, you know, in the next game, he gives away three penalties and gets sent off and is rubbish again. The fact that he was able to go out there and face that, yeah, I mean, I want to give him a little bit of credit for that. Why not?
I like it. I think we've seen a few displays already of mental strength, whether it's from teams coming back, players, coaches as well, already in just these early stages. And that's what's always so great with the World Cup, isn't it? That we get to see these storylines as well that really do mark the occasion.
It's a big reset button, right? You're having a nightmare domestically in your league, your club, whatever. Look at Cristiano, right? All of a sudden, sort of in the middle of your season, you get to go and you get to write a totally new story. And it's kind of neat. It's kind of like, you know, like if you were the dorky kid at your school and then you go to boarding school, for example, and nobody knows you, that you were kind of a dork before, you can reinvent yourself, right?
Are you talking about somebody here? Gabbard,
I didn't go to boarding school, so no, just what I've been told.
I know, but I think I just told you that I went to boarding school.
I wasn't pointing at anybody.
I was so cool. I was the Peruvian Fonz at my boarding school. Right? I was very cool. Now, I was going to go with Harry Maguire because that's a really good point. Like, you know, everything that he's dealt with and just consistently delivering and being basically the man of the match in the last two performances for England, I think.
Let's not get carried away here.
I think he was. The last game, he definitely was. The first game, I can't remember, but the last game, he was.
0-0 defeat against the United States.
USA wins 0-0.
Okay, so a lot of love for Harry Maguire. In fact, a lot of love for Manchester United players today. Casemiro and Bruno Fernandes. Big love for both of them turning out for their sides today. So we're going to go to our group predictions for each group. Because obviously we were all made on ESPN FC to pick our brackets and just seeing if there have been any changes so far. I'm going to actually have to bring up the groups just to be able to do this. Because I know already, Luis, you've been changing your mind somewhat just from what you've seen. Portugal being one of the pointers today. So we're back in action with Group A. Oh, sorry. Wait a minute, guys. Back in action with Group A.
I was going to say, okay, it was less me changing my mind than Portugal forcing me to change my mind.
So as a reminder, guys, so let's get to Netherlands, Ecuador, Senegal, Qatar. That's Group A. Who did you guys or who have you guys got coming out of this group? I'll start with you, Luis.
Well, I had Netherlands and Senegal, and I made that prediction before Sadio Mane. And I think that I'm going to be wrong. And I hope I'm wrong because I'm rooting for my South Americans here. Of course, I'm hoping that Ecuador does it, but we'll see. So I think Ecuador will make this happen.
Obviously, we know the hosts are already out. So Netherlands, Ecuador, Senegal, and Qatar. Gab?
I think, I make so many.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I don't remember I think I predicted Holland and Senegal. I think it's going to be Holland and Senegal. But for what I've seen on merit, it should be Senegal and Ecuador.
So Group B is the interesting one, because I think most of us had England and USA getting out of this group. Yeah. Right now, England sit top, Iran behind them on 3 points, USA on two, Wales on one. Am I alone in thinking that it was England and USA for most of our team?
No, I think that's correct. And I'm just a bit worried about, I know it's crazy to say, because the USMNT really deserve more than just a point against England. But I think Iran is going to be a tough, tough animal, because they're not going to sit back. I think England were at the very least very easy to decipher in that point against the USMNT. Iran are not going to do that. They're going to go for it. And I don't know how that's going to be a reactive thing for Greg Berhalter. So I don't know. I'm going to wait till I hear what Gab has to say before I make my decision on that one.
Yeah, England say that. And then I'll bounce backwards and forwards on the rest of the group so we don't take forever on the button. It's interesting to know what you think on Group B, Gab.
Yeah, I think I'm with England and US, and I'm going to stick with England and US. Although, how cool would it be if Wales were to beat England? I think they need to beat them by four goals or more.
I know. Well, it wouldn't be that cool. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Really I mean, I think, yeah,
maybe
for the narrative of the World Cup.
Maybe Harry Maguire, though, so that he doesn't undo all the good work he's done and get all back on his case again.
Just wait. Harry Maguire own goals from that one. Yeah.
So, Gab, I'll let you take Group C then. It's currently Poland on top, 4 points, Argentina on 3 points, Saudi Arabia on 3 points, and Mexico on 1 point. I had Argentina and Poland getting out, but Argentina first and Poland behind them.
Yeah, I think I had Argentina and Poland as well. Now, looking at this, given Poland and Argentina play each other, tell you what, Saudi's looking pretty good. And I don't think it's unthinkable that actually – don't hate me, but Argentina could get knocked out. If, you know, in the end, this is like a knockout game, right? And Poland have the hot goalkeeper and they have Robert Lewandowski. And, you know, in some ways, Argentina have a hot mess at times for all their talent. So I'm not saying it's definitely going to be an upset, but I'm saying is this would be a less surprising upset. And if you had to point to a, you know, so-called big country to go out in the group stage, I think at this point, I would say Argentina is probably the likeliest, unless there's something I'm forgetting.
No, I'm completely in agreement with Gab. I'm not saying it's like, you know, put your money here on this, but I think from what we have seen in this group, it is not a shock at all to say that Poland could definitely beat Argentina, Saudi Arabia beats Mexico, and that's it. It's not a shock to say it. Will it happen is another question, but I think we've seen enough evidence
over.
To suggest that it goes. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, until Messi scores a worldie and saves the day. And the Saudi fans have been brilliant as well. Some of them have been a bit cheeky and having a lot of fun. That's been good to see. I always love to see the characters of the fans coming out as well in some of those stories too. So I'd love to see that. All right, Luis, Group D, France are on top. We already know they're through, 6 points. Australia behind them, 3 points. Then Denmark and Tunisia on a point each. You've been high on Denmark.
Yep, and again, I've been wrong on that one. Not that wrong, though, because, you know, they're still in it, of course. I just thought I'd see a little bit more against France, but to be fair, that's more on France. Didier Deschamps' side has really, once again, similar narratives to what I was thinking about Portugal and how Fernando Santos has surprised me. I think equally Didier Deschamps here has surprised me as well, especially after losing Karim Benzema, etc. I still see Denmark getting out of this. I still think that they will be strong enough against a very brave, who are they playing? Tunisia, right? No, I'm sorry. They drew that one against a very brave Australian side who I really didn't think were going to get any points. So I'm very surprised about that. But I see Denmark getting out of this.
Let's get to Group E then, Gab, because the last time the three of us were together on the FC Daily, it was actually before that Spain-Germany game. We were on different sides of the fence when it came to who was going to win it. We were all wrong because it ended up being a draw, of course. That group, Group E, has Spain 4 points, Japan 3 points, Costa Rica 3 points, and Germany 1 point. I think most of us had Spain and Germany getting out of this group. What do you think it's going to shape up to be in the end, Gab?
I think it's still going to be Spain and Germany, and it really annoys me because Japan screwed everything up. Costa Rica. Honestly, like, if we're going to criticize managers, I don't know what Hajime Moriyasu was thinking in that, making those changes and just really throwing the game away and then losing. And reality now is, again, talk about cool results. How cool would it be if Costa Rica beat Germany?
It would be amazing. It would be amazing. I will adopt myself as Costa Rican on that day if that happens. It would be so great. It's so great because Costa Rica, just being here is a win in itself for them. And the fact that they beat a Japan side, to Gab's point, you know, the strategy wasn't great, but Costa Rica got those 3 points. If they beat Germany, oh my God, I'm buying every Tico in New York City, whatever they want.
And then
it'll be amazing.
Navas to go up the other end and go at Neuer in your face. All right?
Yes, exactly.
Which would never happen because he's far too good for that.
Honestly, they could also win the group because we've seen, you know, Spain are obviously a better team than Japan, but how often have we seen Spain create a bazillion chances and then, you know, they don't finish or whatever. Yeah. We fought at the Euros or, you know, and if that were to happen and Costa Rica beat Germany, then Costa Rica win the group.
Which would be ridiculous.
Stranger things have happened. Group F, Luis, Croatia, Morocco, Belgium, Canada. Canada already out. Croatia 4 points, Morocco 4 points, Belgium 3 points. This is Group F.
I think it's staying as it is. And I'm so happy for Morocco. I think it's staying as it is. I think Belgium have some serious issues on and off the field. I think that everything has been proven already for what Roberto Martinez has been, or rather has not been able to do. And Morocco are here to play. And Croatia, well, Croatia are Croatia. I was silly with Croatia in my predictions before the tournament started. How dare I? Because, you know, they didn't make it to the final, the 2018 World Cup final, for no reason. They're very good, very conservative, but also very resilient. But Morocco's a story here for me. I hope they get out of the group.
Okay, in Group G, Gab, behind Brazil, who we know have already made it now, you've got Switzerland, Cameroon, and Serbia. Who makes it?
I think at this point, I would probably have to lean Switzerland.
On 3 points. Yeah. The other guy's on 1 point each.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where with Switzerland, you never quite know how they actually manage to do it. But they're always there. And I just think today was the real head-to-head that made a difference. And again, Cameroon screwing it up in that game against Switzerland, it could be a very different World Cup. But now with Onana out of the picture, you know, you lose a lot. Plus you wonder, you know, what other things might be going on internally in that team. And obviously you're talking about beating Brazil, which is a pretty big ask.
All right. So we'll go quickly on Group H because we've got to get Gab on a topic that he's going to be talking about a lot tonight, no doubt. Group H, so quickly, Luis, obviously we know Portugal are through now. Ghana behind them on 3 points and it's South Korea and Uruguay both on a point each.
Yeah, I'm 180ing this so much. I want Ghana to come through here. Like, they deserve it. Their fans have been electric. At least Ghana have gone for it every single game. Uruguay have been such a disappointment to me. I had such high hopes for them. I want Ghana here. Ghana wins.
All right. So, Gab, just as you were already busy enough in Qatar covering all of these games, every single game, and we've been getting you on the daily, you've been doing the Gab and Jules podcast, I've been using you on the ESPN FC show, you've been writing your articles too, Juventus decide to heap some more work on you. Could you tell us what's going on there?
Yeah, so basically the entire club board have all resigned, including club president Andrea Agnelli, Pavel Nedved, Maurizio Rivabene, who's the sort of chief executive who came over from Ferrari and was supposed to kind of be the grown-up in the room, kind of represent the rest of the Agnelli family's interests. I actually read the press release that Juve put out that explains why they all resigned. And obviously, from their point of view, they're saying that, you know, obviously they're under a whole bunch of different investigations for accounting irregularities, for the way you amortize players and whatnot. And basically, they're saying, well, we firmly believe that, you know, everything we did was legit and we have legal advice to prove it, whatever. Our opinion hasn't changed. However, we are listed on the stock exchange. And so kind of a, you know, to give a sign and to let people go and kind of do their jobs vis-a-vis the legal side of this, we're going to take a step back. Now, I think a lot of people are going to interpret this as possibly the, I mean, Fabrizio Romano suggests that it's the end of the Agnelli era. I think that's only the vibe that's coming out. I wouldn't be so sure because he's still the second largest shareholder of Exor, which is the holding company that, you know, actually has the majority in Juve. But I think there's a lot of people within Exor who, you know, think it's time for a change. I think it's also important that Maurizio Rivabene, the aforementioned chief executive, he's staying on as, even though he resigned from the board, he's still staying on to kind of run the club day to day. And, you know, certainly the vibe that we're getting is, you know, they're going to hit the reset button at this club, at the way it's run and its business model, and try to figure a way out.
Wow. And you'll be hearing a lot more from Gab, no doubt, on this situation. And we'll keep you up to date with it all going forward as well. We'll be back tomorrow on ESPN FC Daily after the conclusion to Group A's games. You can maybe hear babies crying upstairs at my house. That's one of the reasons I won't be on the morning shift tomorrow. But we'll also be back after Juventus fans might be back with us. We'll see if they're waiting for the latest news as well. Group B's games as well. So we're with you twice tomorrow. We thank Gab for being with us again today, and we'll let him get some rest now because it looks like a busy night is ahead for him. Portugal are through. We'll see you tomorrow.